the World Soccer Talk podcast. We're back, the only podcast on the planet that focuses on watching soccer on TV, online, and apps. It's soccer, and this time of the year, it's the World Cup. In episode 77, we feature a discussion about the opening 2 days of World Cup coverage on US television, news about NBCSN broadcasting a World Cup game, our thoughts on the United bid winning the rights to host the 2026 World Cup, and much more. My name is Christopher Harris, a.k.a. The Gaffer, and I'm joined by my co-host, Kartik Krishnaiyer. Kartik, we're recording this, listeners, on the Friday morning, so we've got one game in, 63 to go. How are you feeling so far, Kartik, in terms of energy levels, and are you going to be able to make it?
As of now, no. Yesterday, I was thinking, oh my gosh, we've got a month of this. Because already feeling kind of worn down, but you know, once you get into the tournament, you start working, and I think Chris, you and I have experienced this in previous World Cups. Just start working and running on adrenaline ourselves, and it becomes very natural. Granted, this World Cup is a little earlier some of the start times than the last few, but you get into a routine where you start waking up earlier, you're starting to program yourself, you wind down at an earlier time. So I think it'll be okay.
Yeah, for me, it's. I mean, I was kind of asking it, kind of tongue in cheek, but also seriously, because I got a cup of hot tea with me right here. Usually, for me, most of the work for the World Cup is the build up to it. Like, for example, on WorldSoccerTalk.com, we've got 64 articles that go into minute detail about streaming, about TV, about replays, about previews. So it's. I mean, we always say it's a marathon, not a sprint, and we mean it too, because even for listeners too, just watching games, like on average, there's about three games a day. This weekend on Saturday, there's four. It starts at 6 o'clock in the morning Eastern time. A lot of the listeners, myself included, are probably used to getting up early to watch soccer, so it's nothing to complain about, but definitely something to consider in terms of just making sure that you get plenty of sleep. And stay healthy, because it's a whole month where you could easily get sick from watching so much soccer. All right, Kartik. So let's jump into what we've been watching. Let's start off with yours then. So let's start off with and let's go backwards. So we'll get into the 2026 vote in a little bit. We'll get into last week's games a little bit. But let's jump in right into the World Cup. And what have you experienced so far? And what channels have you been watching up to now?
Yeah, ESPN FC has done a whole really good week of those. They've got Gab Markadi in Russia. They've got Seb Salazar Gomez in Russia. They have Dan Thomas in Bristol, along with Craig Lee. And Stuart Robson, which is great to have him in Bristol, and Alejandro Moreno, Steve Nicol, and they've covered the tournament from all ends. They've really been able to kind of put the transfer stories aside for this week and focus on the tournament. Although so much of the tournament, when you look at a broader football perspective, with people who are working and living and breathing European football 365 days a year. Ultimately, when you talk about significant players in this tournament, transfer stories become part of it, like Antoine Griezmann opting to stay with Atletico Madrid, those sorts of things. Whereas I think when you get a lot of the part-timers or casual or people who cover U.S. soccer for a living and are just thrown into the World Cup, they're not as in tune to those transfer stories. So a little bit of that. But ESPN FC has been pretty good, really on point, great analysis, what you would expect. I mean, we really miss them, at least from my perspective. I miss them hosting the tournament in English. I've watched Telemundo's build-up, their pregame yesterday, pregame today to the Uruguay-Egypt game. Yesterday's call was Andres Cantor and Manuel Sol. They were excellent. They let the match breathe, but they still are pretty descriptive. You can feel the passion coming from the booth from both of them. And I think my Spanish will probably be much better at the end of the month, because I've kind of committed mentally to watching this tournament on Telemundo. They had Horacio Elizondo giving rules interpretations, and it was timely. It wasn't as as I don't know if clunky is the word or as awkward as sometimes when Fox makes the transition to Dr. Joe Matchnick. Now, this all having been said, I haven't watched a minute of Fox, so I really can't critique their coverage. I've heard people complain about it. I've had people, listeners to the show, email me, direct message me, text message me complaining about their coverage yesterday or on Thursday. I really can't say anything about it because I did not watch it.
Yeah, Kartik, that that goal call by Andres Cantor for the first goal for Russia on Thursday, that was incredible. I didn't see Telemundo's coverage, but I did see the clip on social media. But just a fantastic goal call, and just sums up the energy and the passion, really, and authenticity, to use Telemundo's words, for that broadcast. I'll jump in there too, Kartik. So I have watched Fox. I've watched no ESPN yet. I do plan on doing so. I watched Univision a little bit. I watched maybe about a few minutes of the halftime show for Russia, Saudi Arabia. Univision is having a commercial-free halftime show. So they have a set. It's in Moscow. It's got the backdrop of looks like the Red Square. They got the panelists and they have news and they're talking into your halftime what's happening and live reports from Moscow. Pretty impressive. Again, I don't speak or understand Spanish, so I didn't listen closely in terms of the analysis, but I thought that was interesting. So Fox. All right. So let me mention this first of all, is that I'm going into this tournament on a clean slate. Taking Fox for what it is and giving my honest analysis. So there's going to be some things I like, there's going to be some things I probably don't like, but I'm going in there with an open mind. So Telemundo, I'll probably watch in the next couple of days. But with Fox for this Russia-Saudi Arabia game, the set looks fantastic. The actual analyst that they have, it seems to be very rehearsed, very... not willing to change. So this game, for example, there's a few things on this one. So when I say they're not willing to change, the one thing I wanted to get out of this game, and you mentioned it to Kartik, without having seen this broadcast, is the rules analyst or the referee analyst, which Telemundo has, a former referee. The one thing I wanted to get out of this game, the Russia-Saudi Arabia game, after it was over, was the fourth goal. Okay, was the fourth goal, was it offside? Yes or no? And why wasn't VAR used? And post-match, as soon as the game ended, well, actually, commentary-wise, JP Della Camera and Tony Mueller didn't address it. As soon as for the post-match analysis, that's what I wanted to hear. I wanted to find out, okay, was it offside or not? They didn't even mention it. They showed, okay, here's the highlights of the goals, bang, 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 bang. Russia's on fire. You know, this is great. And the teaser that they gave to come back for the next part of the post match after commercials was come back to find out what this means for Russia. You mean and we as soccer fans know what this means for Russia. I mean, they got a 5-0 victory, a big advantage in goal difference. It's only the first game. It's only 3 points. But puts them in the kind of the ascendancy in a good position, but you know they could lose the next two games and they're out. So the teaser was kind of like, okay, that doesn't do anything to me. We know without having to get that teaser and listen on what's going to happen. So to me, I mean, you send Dr. Joe Matchnick out to Russia, so that's a perfect opportunity to use him. Like, they didn't even address it. They didn't even mention it. They didn't even talk about it. They said, okay, they just kind of glossed right over it. And that's what I'm saying is that they're not willing to change is because you have to be ready on the fly. You mean, as the game is happening, and you mean, and I'm sure they're discussing it off the set in the studio. Okay, was that offside or not? Okay, let's see what we can do to get some footage. And again, part of it is that they're at the mercy of FIFA. And HBS, which is filming these games, but there must be a way to look at that incident and use all the technology that they have. They have a lot of technology. They have a lot of AR technology, augmented reality, to analyze that. And it didn't happen. And then there was no discussion about VAR. Okay, now, so should VAR have been used in that instance? Was VAR used in that instance? What happened? Nothing. And that was the thing I walked away from that match with. Going in with an open mind and walking out going, okay, it's just the first game. Maybe it's baby steps. Maybe it's kind of a learning curve, but disappointed completely.
Yeah. Unfortunately, Chris, I mean, this is part of my criticism of Fox through the years. People think it's just a criticism of the jingoism or the excessive the denial of reality about the U.S. men's national team and over promotion of Americans. That is a big component of it. Don't get me wrong. But another part of it is I think the clunkiness of their production, the rehearsed nature of the commentary on the set, not necessarily of the commentators at the match. I think with John Strong and J.P. Del Camber, they have two real professionals, and Stu Holden, Tony Miola, good analysts, good co-commentators. But the studio, the production levels, and the transitions, that has been a problem for Fox for years. It's gotten better. I'm not saying it hasn't, but to me, Chris, that's a determining factor as to why in a World Cup, I don't want to watch them. I mean, I can put up with it in small doses, Champions League every 2 weeks or so for two matches a week, but I can't put up with it for 31 days straight. So I have a conscious decision, unless I get some really positive feedback about Fox. I mean, I'm open to watching them, but I just kind of consciously also to not aggravate myself decide to watch the tournament as I am at this very moment as we're recording on Telemundo.
Yeah, so let's get more into that. So on the positives, I love the set. The set looks fantastic. The backdrop of the Basilica and the Kremlin looks brilliant. The production actually looks good. Everything looks squeaky clean. It looks very sugary. It looks very, you know, very appealing to the eye. So that's the good part. And it's a first game, so it's one of those things. It's not rocket science in terms of the production of, you mean, discussing, okay, all right, you've got this game, and what's the talking points, and this, that, and the other. I mean, they've done that so many times in the past, you know, what, decade, going through games, so that comes pretty naturally. So it's not that difficult. But where we do need them is post match, which was lacking. The other thing too is the commentary. So I have a lot of respect for JP Della Camera. He's, you know, a veteran commentator, somebody that loves the game. Tony Miola, I have a lot of respect for as a former professional goalkeeper for the United States, as well as playing in Major League Soccer. And as a person, he seems like a really nice person. And to Fox, I think these are the safe choices. However, during games like this one, the Russia against Saudi Arabia game, which is probably a worst nightmare for a football commentator, when it's not the most exciting game, when it's a very one-sided game, JP and Tony Mueller put me to sleep. I mean, almost literally put me to sleep. It was just now JP is a great commentator, but he pretty much only paints what he sees happening in front of him. His style is very much like a radio commentator, which is his background. His background is radio. So if it's an exciting game, you get the best out of him. If it's a one-sided match, his commentating can be a bit boring at times because he's just calling what he sees. And meanwhile, Tony Miola, I would say, is mediocre at best. He's not a good analyst. He doesn't have a lot of experience. To me, like this game is a perfect example of like what would have happened 4 years ago. And we would have Ian Dark and probably Steve McManaman as commentators. And in a game that's so one-sided, that's not the most exciting game, you'd probably have them cracking jokes, or you'd have them just having a little bit of banter or having something to discuss that was interesting, that would hold you.
Like those two did during the Germany-Brazil game in 2014. Quite frankly, Ian Dark did a masterful job that day. And he carried Macca to a certain extent, but it was, what, 5-0 or 4-0 Germany within 25 minutes?
Yeah.
30 minutes. And I remember for a minute, I thought actually in the build-up to this World Cup, Chris, I thought about in my preparation going back and listening to Dark's call of that game. I think now I probably will, today or tomorrow, from minutes 30 to minutes 45, because I just remember thinking, okay, I don't need to watch the rest of this match, but he keeping me engaged and interesting to where I watched the full 90.
Yeah, in most matches, I mean, if this match was a typical league match, this would remind me of probably Man City against Swansea, where it was like, what, 5-0? It was 5-0. And it was such so one-sided. And yeah. I mean, it was. I only watched it because I was a Swansea fan. If I was a neutral fan, or even a Man City fan, I probably would have switched it off and said, okay. And it wasn't so much the commentary, it was just the game itself. The commentary, I don't remember vividly, but in this game, with being a World Cup, being on a huge stage, if you did have an Ian Dark and a Steve Amaka, and it's not because they're English, it's just because they were interesting. And that's the thing. I mean, JP, I like a lot. Tony, I think, is mediocre. But in a game like this, it's not exciting. And that's the thing, and that's the reason I'm probably today going to watch Telemundo. Is Telemundo, even though I don't even understand the language, just the energy, just the passion that's coming through the mic, that's coming through the TV airwaves, seems a lot more exciting. And if it's a match that's a 3-2 match, it's back and forth, goals going in and incredible saves, JP's great for that. It's just in a game like this, it's just, it was mind-numbing, really. Okay, let me go on to Kartik 2. Actually, just got a couple comments, too, for some of our listeners. The first one's from Larry Kern. He posted this on World Soccer Talk. He says, if I hear one more U.S. sports analogy from Tony Miola, I'm going to scream. Mediocre goalkeeper, subpar announcer. He wasn't a mediocre goalkeeper. He was a fantastic goalkeeper. Subpar announcer, perhaps. And then another comment there, too. This one's from World Soccer Talk reader Dan Regan. He says, oh, no, the first half Americans... commentators sounding like they were commentating on a funeral. Absolute rubbish. I'm watching it on Telemundo, even though I don't speak a word of Spanish. They just don't get it. I wouldn't say a funeral, but it definitely was very boring. I was not impressed at all. Let me see if I have any other comments to share with you. I'm looking through my notes here. I mean, I think that was about it. I mean, that was the best word is to describe Fox's World Cup coverage so far in general has been boring. It's been very safe. It's been very predictable. I did not watch World Cup tonight on Thursday night from 11 till midnight Eastern time. I have that taped. I looked on social media this morning. I shouldn't have done, but a lot of people just really upset at that show. I haven't watched it, so I'll give it a chance and give it an open mind on that one. But so far... not that impressed by Fox thus far. It's been pretty predictable. The pregame show, so the preview show that they had on Wednesday night, they had a 1-hour preview show. Gus Hiddink, I have a lot of respect for as a manager. I mean, he's managed some of the biggest teams on the world stage, World Cup tournaments. He seems like a very likable person. His analysis is not that good. From what I've heard thus far, it's kind of Alexi Lalas gives his analysis, and Gus is pretty much, I agree with Alexi. So not very powerful there in terms of giving his own opinions.
Interestingly, Chris, ESPN aired the ESPN FC preview show for the World Cup, the one-hour preview show, I believe three times between Tuesday and Wednesday, all in prime time. So
really?
they were, even though ESPN FC, the Daily Show, remains on ESPN Plus, they did air their World Cup preview on regular television, which was an hour show in addition to the Daily Shows that they're doing each day, and it was quite good. And then they've got SportsCenter, where yesterday it was Scott Van Pelt and Taylor Twellman talking through the first day of the tournament, the first match. So. ESPN's trying to compete with World Cup Tonight and with the preview shows as well, not just via ESPN Plus, but on the channel also.
Yeah, and ESPN 2 is supposed to have a sports center each night that's focused on the World Cup. I think it's an hour show.
Correct.
I tuned in Thursday night. It wasn't on, so I'm guessing maybe it's starting today, Friday. So I'll check that out at 5:30 on ESPN 2. Just a couple of more comments. So some of the analysts that Fox has thus far, Alexi Lalas has been fine. No problems there. Moises Munoz, the former Mexican goalkeeper, seems to be good. Gus Hiddink, I mentioned, is okay, but nothing special. Ian Wright so far has been the weak spot. I don't have a lot of confidence that he knows the world's game. I'm sure he knows England very well, but in terms of anything outside of that, he gets a bit dodgy. For example, they talked just for a brief minute. I think who is it? Rob Stone mentioned something about the crisis on the Spanish national team and Fernando Hierro becoming the manager. And Ian Wright said, "Is it Hierro or something?" Like he didn't know. It sounded like he didn't know what the name was of the person, and it sounded like he didn't know the player, which that was the former player that played in the Premier League. Well known throughout Europe as a professional footballer, and Ian Wright didn't seem to know who he was, or didn't seem to know what his name was. So that was a bit weird in the previous show. That I think Ian's going to be the weak spot on this analysis team. We haven't seen the rest of the guys yet, or the rest of the girls, but we will in the coming days, I'm sure.
And here's where the kind of insight you get from ESPN versus Fox. So this happens. ESPN FC brings in Sid Lowe to discuss it. And Sid Lowe very much describes it as a situation where had he chosen to take the Chelsea job instead of the Real Madrid job, yeah, the Spanish FA might have had a little angst, but he wouldn't have been axed. The reason he was axed is that there has been historically, as I think people who cover international football know or have been around the game a long time, a divide between Barcelona and Real Madrid players, a divide between Catalan and Castilian or Catalan and non-Catalan players, a divide that made Spain the greatest underachievers in this sport at the international level until about a decade ago, right?
Yep.
The fear among the Spanish FA is that that divide reopens with the manager taking the Real Madrid job before a tournament where he's managing a number of Barcelona players. That's why the decision was taken. I'm assuming you never got that analysis on Fox, but you did on ESPN.
Yeah, well, the analysis he got on Fox was it sounded like he didn't even know how to pronounce his name, and it sounded like he wasn't too sure who he was. And it was kind of like, yeah, this it sounds like a good hire or whatever the analysis was. It was not memorable. It was no confidence in it. Yeah, I mean, that's just the way it is. Two more things on Fox before we move on is one is that if you looked at the games, the Russia-Saudi Arabia game side by side with Telemundo, Fox had a 30-second time delay. So if you're watching Telemundo live, you got a 30 seconds advantage over Fox for that particular game in the beginning of that game. So for whatever reason, Fox, I mean, there's usually a time delay anyway. Sometimes you mean like less than 10 seconds, but 30 seconds is a big difference.
Chris, this is a big issue I've been talking about with some people about streaming, because there are a lot of cord cutters, I assume you're one of them, that are watching the World Cup on various streaming platforms. And the concern is because it's the World Cup and you get alerts on your phone, you might be talking to a friend who's watching it on a live television, that the 45 second to a minute lag you traditionally have with streaming is going to deter people from watching it and instead want to go to sports bars or whatever to watch it. I'm not sure how this is going to play out, but a couple of people have mentioned it to me as we get ready for the tournament.
I don't see it as a big deal. I mean, because just most of us are used to it nowadays. I mean, even on television, you get a 30-second difference. So you could be watching the Telemundo stream on your you know, computer or laptop or Roku or whatever, and be ahead of Fox on television. Or I mean, it all depends on your internet speed and how fast that signal is going from wherever it is to where you are. So I think we're used to it. I mean, it's something to be aware of. So if you're going to text your friend and say, Russia just scored an incredible goal, and he's a Saudi Arabian fan, he might not have seen it yet. But 30 seconds, that's a huge time to delay. Last but not least on Fox is the pregame show. So the opening ceremonies on Thursday, there were 13 markets nationwide that didn't even show that broadcast. So that meant that there was no pre-match, there was no opening ceremony, and there was no national anthems for 13 Fox markets nationwide. And these are Fox markets that are deciding to show local news programming, I think Wendy Williams talk show, and all sorts of other strange programming. And then as soon as the game was ready to kick off at 11 Eastern, then they join the broadcast. So that's something to be aware of.
Okay, in defense of Fox here, they typically had a looser relationship with their affiliates. They were a network that came to fruition later. The best local affiliates, the best the most watched channels in bigger local markets are ABC, CBS, and NBC affiliates. That's the bottom line. Fox, as a company, is trying to address this. In addition to kind of their asset sale to Disney, which, you know, Comcast is trying to hijack in some places, they're going to reinvest some of that money in buying local stations in key markets and then controlling the programming, essentially. So by the time 2022 Qatar rolls around, for people concerned about this, there won't be preemptions anymore in some of those markets. So in fairness to Fox, they are at a corporate level trying to address it. They know it's a problem. But it's going to continue to be a problem during this tournament because they don't have that control yet of the affiliates we're talking about.
Yeah, if it is a problem in your local market, then just go to, I mean, Fox Sports Go and watch it through there, or Fubo or Sling or whatever. There's other options out there to be able to watch that.
One other point on Fox. I said I have not watched a minute of the World Cup on Fox. That is correct. I have. I do, however, have watched a little bit of the U.S. Open on FS1, and there has been some very good cross promotion, so I have to give them credit for that. Martin Keimer, German golfer, Rory McIlroy, who we know is a massive Manchester United fan, also Northern Irish. We saw him at the Euros in the crowd, right, in one of the Northern Ireland games. I think it was Northern Ireland Wales, Chris, game right. You and I watched together. In them juggling soccer ball, doing some really good cross promotion. So I was happy about that. I was worried that because Fox has maybe a distinct set of commentators for the World Cup versus the U.S. Open, there wouldn't be any cross promotion. There has been, and it owes itself to the international nature of the audience who watches golf anyway. A lot of crossover soccer fans. You may not have gotten that if it had been a baseball game. So I will give Fox credit for that. They were really pushing the World Cup during their U.S. Open broadcast.
All right, so before we move on to talk about the 2026 World Cup coverage of that decision, congratulations, Kartik, for becoming the Miami FC commentator. I understand you called a match this week, midweek.
Yeah, so along with Bruce Silverman, who I've worked with before with the Four Lauderdale Strikers. So I appreciate that, Chris. Big shoes to fill. Juan Arango did an outstanding job the last 2.5 seasons with Miami FC as our friend Juan Arango, who's obviously worked with us here at World Soccer Talk, working with Bruce, but I'm now doing filling that role, that co-commentary role, for the remainder of the season. So thank you, and I appreciate it.
So World Cup 2026 coming to the United States, Mexico, and Canada. Speaking of congratulations, I mean this is obviously big news. If this had gone the other way, I can't even imagine what Fox's coverage would have been like in terms of just the doom and gloom. But thankfully, in a way, it went our way. And for me personally, I mean, the 2026 is more about my kids. Is the last World Cup, 1994 in the United States, and ever since then, I've been wanting to have a World Cup in our country so I could take my kids to it and so they can experience what the World Cup is like and all the different cultures from within the United States and from around the world. So that for me personally is why I'm excited about it. Politically speaking, I mean, to me, this gives U.S. soccer now carte blanche to push through whatever they want or need in the next 8 years. I mean, this is a huge, huge positive for them in terms of doing whatever they want to do. And at the end of the day, I was on a conference call midweek, right after this decision was made, with U.S. Soccer and with the Canadian Federation and the Mexican Federation, on the line with other journalists, and was trying to ask a question and did not get through to be picked to ask one of the questions. My question was going to be, is what does this mean for the lower league soccer in the United States specifically? Does this mean that we're going to get a sudden kind of influx of cash to help promote the lower leagues and help to stabilize those? That was a question I had. Kartik, what's your take?
Well, my answer would be that they've just turned down $500 million from Rocco Commisso to stabilize and help and fund the lower leagues and invest in infrastructure, stadiums. Part of the problem with lower league soccer is that the teams, almost all of them, few exceptions like San Antonio, rent their stadiums. They're not able to monetize the revenue from parking and from concessions, et cetera. And they go out of business eventually. They all go out of business eventually if they don't make it to MLS. So, yeah, my concern is that this is going to give them carte blanche. Just as you said, I had very mixed emotions. On a human, personal level, I wanted the U.S. to host. And I don't know if that came across in some of my commentary because I was concerned about these other things and was pointing them out. But from a political standpoint, the U.S. Soccer Federation is in violation of an umpteen number of FIFA rules. They have a league structure that's dysfunctional. They have a league structure that, to me, has contributed to the decline, if you want to call it that, or at the very least, a stagnation of the sport at the highest level in this country, that being the U.S. men's national team. It's a federation that I think has not they made great investments in the women's game more than anyone else many years ago, but now that's even stagnating. So I have a lot of concerns about them being essentially patted on the back by 125 FIFA members, or 135, whatever the vote was, and being given hosting rights for the World Cup without having to make any of the changes to the league structure and to the domestic game that I had assumed FIFA at the administrative level, or at the very least, some of the other member FIFA nations would have tried to hold them accountable to make before awarding them the World Cup. And I'll say similar things about Canada. There are a number of problems with the Canadian Soccer Association, although Canadians I speak to think this might help bring those factions together under a common purpose. You could say that about the U.S. too, but historically we've seen the U.S. Federation uses opportunities like this when they're emboldened to crush the opposition or marginalize the opposition. We're going to have very potentially a franchise relocation, a club relocation in Major League Soccer in the next few months. When that happens and a federation does nothing about it, I don't think they should be rewarded with hosting the World Cup. But on a human level, on a personal level, I'm happy the World Cup is coming here. I guess the net balance is personally I'm happy, but professionally I think it's something that if I'm voting in good conscience with the responsibilities you have as a FIFA member nation, I would not have voted for the United States. I probably would have voted for Morocco also. Right. I would have tried to abstain or reopen the bidding, which doesn't seem many were interested in doing.
Right. I mean, for me, though, too, Kartik, with FIFA, you mean approving the U.S. and Mexico and Canada for the 2026 World Cup, the likelihood now of FIFA going in and looking very closely at the way that the U.S. leagues are structured, and you mean lack of promotion relegation and all those things that other leagues from around the world have, are very, very unlikely to happen. I mean, now it's okay. All right, let's just forget about that for 8 years. And maybe 8 years from now, I mean, who knows what's going to happen?
Yeah.
But it really gives the U.S. carte blanche. The other thing, too, is I expect Major League Soccer, I'm sure, 100% sure of this, is Major League Soccer through U.S. Soccer is going to maximize this for the league's gain over the next 8 years. I have no problem with that. The issue I have is, okay, so if MLS is going to maximize that exposure within World Cups and et cetera, what about USL? What about NASL? What about NPSL? What about all these other leagues? I mean, what opportunities do they have to promote and maximize their leagues through the U.S. Soccer Federation and through the World Cup? I'm pretty sure it's going to be very, very little. I mean, it's going to be just lip service. And then one more issue too, and one other issue is the ticket prices. So for those that haven't been paying attention, I mean, the United...
This will happen in the Copa America also, where people were excited, Chris,
yeah,
that the U.S. was hosting this Copa America Centenario. And then when the ticket prices got published, it was like, whoa, same thing happened.
I mean, Copa America Centenario prices are nothing compared to this. So FIFA won this. I mean, basically the FIFA member nations voted for this. The pledge from U.S., Mexico and Canada was that we're going to generate, what, $11 billion for FIFA and sort of $50 million per each FIFA member nation. But the ticket prices, the average ticket price for the 2026 World Cup is going to be $431. So that's what they're banking on. That's what they're banking on is people like you and I, people, the listeners that are mad soccer fans, that love the game, that want to bring their family. So you bring your family of four to a game, one game, it's going to be over $1,600, which is absolutely crazy. And that's the thing. And that's one of the main reasons. That was the main kind of talking point. That was the main selling point from the United bid was money. This is going to be nothing compared to Copa America Centenario in terms of once people see realize what the ticket prices are and just freak out. And this is going to be, I mean, with the country like the size of the United States, and you have kind of the 1% of the population that would be able to afford this, no problem. That's like an expensive concert ticket, no problem. We can afford it. That's one thing. But for the rest of us, oh my gosh. All right, Kartik. So before we move on, anything else you've been watching or anything else to point out? I mean, I don't want to go through everything, but anything else that stands out?
Yeah, I watched a lot of MLS this week. I think there's been some good action. The TFC Philly game I enjoyed on Friday night. Vancouver-Orlando. Vancouver, Alphonso Davies. You talk about Canada co-hosting in 2026. Alphonso Davies, who is an 18-year-old academy product in Vancouver, just a fantastic Canadian international, full international already. Just fantastic player. Enjoyed watching him and Vancouver. Really enjoyed that game. The thing I like about MLS Live, since it's been folded into ESPN Plus, I know people have complained about the spoilers, because if you're on the ESPN Plus app or on the ESPN app and you go to the Plus button, you can see the scores of games. And people have not liked that. It'll say Seattle won, Orlando won, 60th minute. But then I will say, hey, this is an interesting game. Let me click on it. So all told, I probably have watched portions of the majority of MLS games these last two match days in the league but I haven't watched any games with the exception of a few in their entirety because of this feature. So I've actually enjoyed that. Check that out on ESPN Plus if you care to, if you're interested. And also the France-US game, Taylor Twellman was fantastic in that game with Ian Dark. And again, just so whenever I watch ESPN, Chris, I know I sound like I'm droning on and I repeat myself all the time on this show, but it just reminds me of what we're missing with them not having the World Cup rights.
Yeah, it's a shame that ESPN couldn't just like do kind of 2014 World Cup, just show some of the coverage, in the midnight hours or something like that, just to have it on. I would watch it again. It was that good. So speaking of the World Cup, the greatest soccer tournament on the planet is here. And for those of you who want to enjoy the energy and passion of the World Cup, we've got a recommendation for you. With Sling Blue, you can get all of the World Cup games available on FS1. Plus, where available, you can watch the World Cup games on the Fox network. But even if Sling Blue doesn't have your local Fox affiliate, you can use Sling Blue to watch the games on FS1 and then watch the Fox games on your TV set for free with an inexpensive HD antenna. In addition to getting the Fox channels for the World Cup, Sling Blue offers 45 other channels, including NBCSN, AMC, FX, TNT, Nick Jr., BBC America, and much more. And with Sling's seven-day free trial, you can take the service for a test drive, and if you like what you see, it'll cost you only $25 per month from there to watch your favorite programming. No cable or satellite subscription is required, nor do you need a long-term contract, and you can cancel it at any time. And you can watch Sling Blue on your Roku players and smart TVs, Apple TV, Amazon Fire TV, Air TV player, Samsung and LG smart TVs, Amazon Fire tablet, Amazon Cube, and Windows 10, also on the Chrome browser, on Windows or Mac computers, ZTE, Apple iOS 8 and higher phones and tablets, Android phones and tablets, and Xbox One. So sign up for Sling TV's free 7-day trial today at worldsoccertalk.com/Sling World Cup to watch the 2018 World Cup without a cable or satellite subscription. Again, that's worldsoccertalk.com/Sling World Cup. Kartik, let's move on to TV streaming news.
Yeah, two familiar names and voices for American audiences, Derek Gray and Lee Dixon, have been added to the FIFA 19 video game, along with Martin Tyler and Alan Smith, who have done the game in the past, will continue to do the game this year. Ray will be doing Champions League commentaries, which is something that's familiar to American audiences going further back when he used to be the voice of the Champions League in this country when ESPN had the rights a decade ago.
Now, judging by the first 4 to 5 days of Fox's World Cup coverage, Fox Sports is going to average about 6 hours per day of live coverage outside of the games themselves. So Fox's coverage of the World Cup begins, began on Wednesday with a preview show. From then on, it's a daily onslaught of FIFA World Cup live show hosted by Kate Abdo in the early morning hours, while World Cup Today kicks off later, hosted by Rob Stone. And then the late-night show, hosted by Fernando Fiore, is entitled World Cup Tonight, and that'll flip back and forth between Fox and FS1, often starting on one of the channels and then continuing on the other station immediately after the first hour ends. So approximately 1 to 2 hours of World Cup Tonight, almost like a late-night TV show. I mean, that's what it effectively is, kind of your... I mean, in previous years, we'd have had Johnny Carson and David Letterman. Now you've got Fernando Fiore. So in terms of the spot they're in is a great spot. In terms of TV ratings, we'll have to wait and see how well it does.
NBCSN is going to be showing the Brazil-Switzerland game, a simulcast of Telemundo's coverage on Sunday. My understanding, Chris, is that they're going to do this a few times during the tournament. So for those of you who don't get Telemundo, who complain, hey, we'd like to watch something other than Fox, but we don't get Telemundo or we don't get Universo, you can watch the Brazil-Switzerland game, which is a Sunday afternoon on NBCSN, and check your programming guide or check out World Soccer Talk. There will be more of these matches, I understand, during the course of the month in Russia.
Well, I asked NBC that, and I said to them, like, hey, you mean, are there any other matches planned? And they said no. So I don't know. You would think so, right, Kartik? Because there's a lot of people that can't get Telemundo.
Yeah, my understanding was that so you've asked them directly, and so maybe they won't. But my understanding was, at least the story we ran in Sport Business earlier in the week, is that they were going to do a few.
Yeah, that was wrong. So Ian Thomas, I think Sports Business Daily, had that incorrect. So only this one match, the Brazil-Switzerland game, which is a great idea. And I would expect them to do more, but right now it's the only one. But, a lot of people don't have Telemundo, can't get Telemundo. I think they could get some big numbers on this one, so we'll have to wait and see. Speaking of big numbers, TV ratings for last week, and actually I've got some numbers from this week too. Again, Mexico is like a juggernaut. 1.7 million people tuned in to watch Mexico against Scotland. On the Univision channels. Of course, I'm sure most of those people were tuning in to watch Scotland. but 1.2 million people tuned in for Mexico against Denmark, which was their final friendly before the World Cup, again on the Univision channels. The France-USA game that you watched on ESPN, Kartik, 697,000 viewers. Great numbers there. And which is interesting, too, just because, obviously the France side of things would bring in a lot of viewers and make it more of a meaningful game rather than, say, the Bolivia match. On the Univision channels, that France-USA game had 395,000 viewers. So collectively, over 1 million viewers for that France-USA game in total. USA against Ireland, friendly, they had 303,000 viewers on Univision. And last but not least, 292,000 viewers for Columbus against New York Red Bulls on Saturday. And that was a doubleheader. So again, you've got a doubleheader. You've got France against USA at 3 p.m. Eastern. And as soon as the game ends, as soon as the coverage ends, it moves right into Columbus, Red Bulls, New York. And Kartik, hot off the presses, we got a number in too. This is for the Fox's World Cup preview show that they showed in primetime on FS1 on Wednesday night from 7 to 8 p.m., which we mentioned in the What We've Been Watching segment. Any guesses on the number of viewers for this one?
For a preview show? Jeez. I don't know.
101,000 viewers. which you would think.
Okay. So I was thinking, do I say a million? Do I say 750? Do I say five? Okay.
But you would think going, I mean, obviously the U.S. is not in the World Cup, but you would think, okay, this is the big show before the World Cup. This is a preview show. This is, okay, that's, I mean, again, and we've seen this before too, even for the World Cup draw, the analysis post-match, you mean, from ESPN, ESPN2, I think it was greater than the coverage on the big Fox in terms of the number of people. People don't tune in to Fox for the analysis. I mean, obviously, I'm preaching to the choir to a lot of listeners, and yourself included. But again, it goes to say, I mean, it goes to show, 101,000 viewers tuned in to watch that preview show. That's, I mean, that's nothing.
Well, okay, so if you go back to December, and obviously I wrote a story about this for World Soccer Talk, and we discussed it a lot on the show, there was the ESPN FC preview show, which garnered a higher rating, or sorry, not preview show, reaction to the draw show, right, which garnered a higher rating than the Fox.
The draw itself.
The draw itself. So that might be happening throughout the tournament, where you've got World Cup tonight going up against the special sports centers on ESPN, the ESPN FC shows, which are on ESPN Plus, but we saw with the preview, they put it on ESPN 2, so maybe they're going to do that occasionally during the tournament. And also, just a general bumper coverage, ESPN seems to be giving this tournament. I'm anxious to see day one ratings from Fox in terms of the game and the World Cup tonight. But I have a feeling when we're convene next, Chris, we're going to have a lot to discuss as far as Fox ratings, Telemundo ratings versus also the Univision ratings. Univision, as you watched yesterday, doing a lot of bumper coverage as a former rights holder. And it could be that the rights to show the matches, the value of that, because remember how much they paid for this, is massive. But then the ancillary programming that would go along with live coverage is less valuable than it used to be because there is a residual desire among fans to engage the previous rights holders because there's a comfort level there. And this goes on the Spanish side too. With I'm very full of praise of Telemundo's coverage. I'm watching it right now as we speak, actually. I think Univision is going to continue to draw pretty decent numbers for their, particularly around Mexico games, their ancillary coverage.
Yeah, it's an issue for Fox. I mean, we mentioned the news segments. There's about an average of 6 hours of coverage that are not related to the games themselves. So 6 hours a day where they're trying to maximize the amount of viewership so that they can get the most advertising dollars possible. And the problem that they have is most people don't watch Fox for the analysis. They just tune in for the games. And with the games not having, I mean, commercials during the games, all you have, if somebody tunes in at minute one and tunes out at minute 90, is the halftime. Then you've got, like, what, the 10 minutes of commercials or 10 or 15 minutes in there. That's the hot take time. But for Univision, which is smart, I mean, in terms of, I mean, offering a commercial-free halftime show, which revenue-wise doesn't help them. It'll help them with the numbers. But for Fox, I mean, that's got to be a big issue. I mean, so that's something they need to improve upon. We'll have to wait and see. Maybe things will get better in terms of the analysis. We'll have to wait and see. All right, listener mailbag. We've got a couple of comments came in. First one is from Dan Meyercourt through email. He says, "Hi, Chris and Kartik. In the most recent episode, Kartik said he believes the soccer media in the U.S. played a role in the failure to qualify for the World Cup by creating a bubble of delusion. While that's probably true among fans, do you honestly believe that the coaching staff and players were affected by the media's narratives? Players often say that they pay little to no attention to what the media says and rather just focus on their job. I absolutely agree that the media and fans of soccer in the U.S. need to be more honest with themselves, but I find it hard to believe that stories in the media can have a direct impact on the team's performance. Thanks, and I look forward to hearing your thoughts."
Great little note, Dan. I agree somewhat. I think that's probably true with most of the players. Where I think it does have an impact is that there was a bubble, a kind of the U.S. soccer intelligentsia, which includes the coaches, which would include Bruce Arena in this specific case, and perhaps Klinsmann before that, where and we talked about this during the Gold Cup, and I give so much credit to Sebastian Salazar for raising the issue during the Gold Cup as well, because I was sitting in Bruce Arena's, a couple of Bruce Arena press conferences during the Gold Cup, and was just I couldn't believe the level of questioning. I couldn't believe the kind of answers, and it was passed off as okay and acceptable by the media sitting in the room. I think they had created this vacuum and this separate context and really a degree of alternate reality about the quality of the United States team, to the point where the day of the Trinidad and Tobago game and the day before, I'm fighting or arguing with some media who covered the U.S. team as to whether the U.S. would qualify from UEFA and which groups they qualified from, when I had said they wouldn't qualify from any of the groups in UEFA, and in South America would finish maybe ahead of Bolivia, and that's it, maybe. They were telling me, oh, no, for this scenario, we'd qualify. If we were in South America, maybe we'd make the playoff. We'd be fighting for that last spot. There is this level of delusion, and I think it did spread to the coaches and to the administrators in U.S. soccer. Now, does it spread to the players or all the players? Probably not, but I think, it just creates a kind of a context where then the players are hearing from the coaches this sort of thing, and they're more comfortable than they should be.
I think it does affect the players, and I'll tell you why. A lot of it is from the U.S. soccer media asking softball questions. And I wrote a really good article a couple of years ago, I think during the, was it the Confederations? What did they call that thing? The Mexico-USA game.
Oh, the CONCACAF Cup.
CONCACAF Cup. And obviously the U.S. lost that game. Mexico went on to the Confederations Cup. And in that defeat, the questions that came out of that press conference, and I wrote them down one by one, and the questions were softball. It wasn't as if, like, okay, Jurgen Klinsmann, you mean, tactically, what did you do wrong in this game? Where, you mean, you made this decision, what were you thinking, type of thing. The questions were, so out of this defeat, what are the positives that you can take out of it? I'm like, the questions were just horrible. They were really softball questions. And I'm thinking, as a coach, there's no accountability from the media. The media should be asking the tough questions, putting the manager on the spot, the coach on the spot, so that he knows that, you mean, the gravity of the situation in terms of whether it's a World Cup qualifying match, whether it's the CONCACAF Cup, whether it's the Gold Cup, whatever it may be. That trickles down to the players. So the players are not in that room, but the players will have questions from the media, probably similar softball questions. Even though they say they don't pay attention to the media, we know that they do. So they're listening to, you mean, different shows or reading things and seeing all these positive things, not getting as much critical analysis. And not that it's negative, but just critical analysis where they understand the situation that they're in. I think it has a big impact on the players, more so the coaches, for sure. And that's why I think, going back to what you had said, Kartik, where the U.S. media, in a way, played a role in the failure to qualify for the World Cup, is because they did create this bubble of delusion where they thought that, you mean, the U.S. was pretty much guaranteed to advance. They had this great team, and, you mean, the reality is completely different.
So now the narrative from many of those same people is how strong CONCACAF is. A week from now, we could be having a discussion about how weak CONCACAF is and how weak, again, Australia, a team that eliminated the fourth-place CONCACAF team in the Intercontinental Playoff, is. So they're still trying various degrees of spin. You would think, I should have mentioned this earlier in the show when we talked about the 2026 thing, 2026 bid, you would think by some of the reaction, the U.S. had actually won the World Cup itself.
Yep.
It got to the quarterfinals, or a player with a team with an American player had won the UEFA Champions League. Something huge had happened in terms of on the field considerations, on the pitch considerations. I think the game in the United States, so much of the narrative is dictated by economics and by the preferences, personal preferences of the elites that govern the game, which, as I mentioned earlier, are not in line with the way the game is governed and played in the rest of the world, not in line with FIFA statutes. It's all part of a same vicious cycle that we seem unwilling to pull out of, even when we have failure thrown in our face, the biggest failure we've had in 30 years thrown in our face. Nothing is changing. It's frustrating. I can go on and on.
Yeah, anyway. And speaking, just one more thing. Speaking of delusion, I mean, just read or listen to any interviews that Bruce Arena has done since November, since he, you mean, led the team to miss out on U.S. qualification to the World Cup. It's just, if you listen to what he says, he's completely delusional in terms of what his beliefs are and how, you mean, it's. He's not blaming himself at all. It's blaming kind of everything else.
Injury to John Brooks, which I admit played a big role in things.
But you went back to, you mean, kind of the tried and true, very safe choices in terms of player selection.
And you've seen
from the US, even in a game against France, yes, they got a long way to go, but there are some youth products coming through the system that have, you mean, more energy, that have...
I'm not sure how Miazga wasn't playing in the Trinidad and Tobago game. Okay, so he's 21 now, right? He's not 18. And Arena mentioned in his Fox interview a month after the loss, basically, and Wallace and Stone didn't really challenge him on it, although I think they were... I could see Wallace's face. I think he was a little perplexed, but just backed off. Said, oh, well, I was planning on taking Miazga to the World Cup anyway. Okay, if you were planning on taking him to the World Cup because he was playing well at Vitesse, obviously he's on loan from Chelsea there, as many players at Vitesse are, why wasn't he even called in as a reserve for the final qualifiers?
Yeah.
It just defies logic. So he's trying to spin and say, oh, yeah, that young one that Sarakin is picking, Sarakin is obviously his longtime assistant, longtime associate, I was going to take him to the World Cup. I was going to take Weston McKennie to the World Cup. I don't know. It's just bizarre.
Yeah, so that's why I mentioned that, just in terms of some of the delusional thinking and the lack of critical analysis, the lack of critical thinking from a questioning from the U.S. soccer media. Not all of them, but a large contingent of that. So if you have any questions, feedback, want some advice, let us know. You can always reach us via email through web@worldsoccertalk.com, as well as on facebook.com/worldsoccertalk and on Twitter @worldsoccertalk. Plus, of course, you can post comments on the mothership, worldsoccertalk.com. So, Kartik, for those listeners who want to stay updated on some of your tweets and some of your rants and raves during the World Cup, where can they find you on Twitter?
You can find me at KKFLA737.
All right. Well, thank you for listening. You can get a new episode of the World Soccer Talk podcast every Thursday. We're planning on probably doing it every Thursday or every Friday, depending on how this World Cup goes. I'm sure next week's episode is going to be action-packed. Every episode is released on SoundCloud, YouTube, Stitcher, iTunes, TuneIn, Audioboom, and worldsoccertalk.com. If you like the show, share it with your friends on social media and give us a review on iTunes. And Kartik, with the World Cup, what should they do?
Enjoy your football.